Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio. My name is Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX. The following articles are from the March 2024 The Spectrum Monitor, and we'll begin by finishing Radio 101 by Ken Reitz, KS4ZR. The QT40 gets some muscle. North, South, Central America, and Caribbean. K5WLT, Seguin, Texas. 5959, 1,300 miles. VA6DJ, Alberta, Canada. 5959, 1,800 miles. XE1XR, Mexico. 5757, 1,800 miles. CE4JZO, Chile. 5754, 5,000 miles. LU9HAT, Argentina. 5757, 4,800 miles. YW6CQ, Venezuela. 5959, 2,000 miles. PR1WWA, Brazil. 5959, 3,700 miles. CP9HTL, Paraguay. 5555, 4,600 miles. VP8LP, Falkland Islands. 5756, 6,300 miles. YN9H, Nicaragua. 5959, 1,800 miles. V31XX, Belize. 5959, 1,500 miles. TI5CDA, Costa Rica. 5959, 2,000 miles. CO7MS, Cuba. 5858, 1,100 miles. NP4BL, Puerto Rico. 5757, 1,500 miles. TO2FY, French Guiana. 5959, 2,700 miles. KO2B, U.S. Virgin Islands. 5959, 1,600 miles. HI8AT, Dominican Republic. 5959, 1,400 miles. Total DXCC count, 46. In the above list of DX stations worked on 10 meters over a two-week period, there's only one station to represent each DXCC entity. Needless to say, working all Canadian provinces and U.S. states is no trouble at all, but it will take a while for propagation to reach into each state you need to work. Obviously, Hawaii and Alaska will be even harder. But take heart, I've worked both states on 10 meters many times. It will just take time and a certain amount of patience because both states attract pile-ups whenever they bring a signal to the band. In addition to chasing DX, I also made a number of contacts direct with Europe on FM, one of which was with a French ham who was running 80 watts. And I even heard Russia's only 10-meter repeater, RR3AAC, on 29.67 megahertz. Heard easily, but not yet worked. Hey, I've only been doing this for 2 weeks. India, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, Namibia, Jordan, and South Africa. A lot of contacts, especially the rare DX call signs, are necessarily the briefest exchange of call sign and signal report with many stations calling. Even those are important because it shows the capability of your station's setup. I was able to contact VP8LP on the second call, despite a considerable pileup. Other contacts were leisurely chats, especially the non-rare DX, where details of each other's operating conditions, location, other hobbies, etc. are exchanged. One memorable contact was with a POTA operator, who is located in the White River National Forest in Colorado at 11,200 feet altitude. The operator, a relatively new ham, was having a great time operating with 20 watts using a whip antenna clamped to the railing of a very remote cabin, a 2-mile snowshoe hike from the car, This kind of operating calls for considerable fitness. A German ham from east of Berlin mentioned that during the division of Germany, he had all homebrew equipment, and that once the Soviet Union collapsed, he was thrilled to buy Japanese equipment, which he still had. The QT-40 doesn't have a full-range VFO, but if a station is operating between 0 and 5 kHz, you can use the FIN knob to go up or down enough kilohertz to display the correct frequency by holding both the up and down buttons on the microphone and turning the FIN knob to reach the frequency the other station is transmitting on. There are some good YouTube videos that explain this procedure well, including using software via your PC to allow you to tune all frequencies as well as operate split, transmitting on one frequency and receiving on another. There is a four-element version of this antenna, SY27-4, available from buyantenna.com for $159 plus shipping. It features a 13.5-foot boom, 18.75-foot reflector, weighing 13.5 pounds. Antenna gain is claimed to be 13.15 dBi, a claim I well believe given the results I have had with the three-element version. I would spring for the extra $10 for this antenna over the three-element version because the extra dB of gain, which is very helpful for a 35-watt transceiver. It's a little heavier, but I think it could be turned by a heavy-duty TV antenna rotator. For comparison, DX Engineering has the high-gain 3-element 10-meter beam, which has an 8-foot boom and longest element at 18.6 feet, with a weight of 15 pounds for $330 plus shipping. MFJ Enterprises offers their 10-3 Yagi for $400. It also features an 8-foot boom and the longest element at 18 feet. QSL. And now a word about QSLs. If you're working on DXCC or WAS, the best way to confirm your contacts is going to be via Logbook of the World. At www.arrl.org/logbook-of-the-world, which most DX hams use. LOTW is described by the ARRL as a web-accessed database and repository that enables you to submit electronic logs for amateur radio contacts and for confirmation. Users can view submitted QSOs and resulting QSLs online. Radio amateurs can use LOTW to track their progress toward achievements. This system makes achieving WAS or DXCC much faster than the old paper QSL checking system that involved physically presenting your box of paper QSL cards to be checked by an official from ARRL certifying your claim. If you want paper QSL cards from your contacts, it will be much harder to reach those DX milestones. It will take far longer and it will be much more costly. Many stations will only use LOTW. Others that I've worked state flatly on their QRZ page that they do not QSL in any manner. Those that do will be expensive if you try to QSL by mail. Many require $2, $3, or more U.S. dollars for a QSL card. Remember, the U.S. Postal Service does not issue International Reply Coupons, IRCs, and most DX stations won't accept them either. And the mail moves slower in many parts of the world than others, and many national postal services are not very secure. Some stations warn on their QRZ page not to send money. They'll never get it. Another traditional method of exchanging paper QSL cards is through the QSL Bureau, which in the U.S. is operated by the ARRL. You don't need to be an ARRL member to receive QSLs via the Bureau, but you do have to be a League member to send QSLs through the outgoing QSL Bureau. To learn more about the U.S. QSL Bureau, go to ARRL.org/incoming-QSL-service. But keep in mind that many countries don't have a QSL Bureau, and many hams in countries that do have a bureau can't afford the cost of using their own bureau. In addition, many QSL bureaus are very slow. Expect to wait years to receive QSL cards through some bureaus. Many Big Gun DX contacts advise that they don't want your QSL card in return. Another method is through clublog.org, which lets you use your PayPal account to securely pay the DX station or DXpedition for a QSL confirming your contacts. This is usually done through a QSL manager who handles the QSL requests for various DX stations or DXpeditions. It's much faster and more secure than postal mail, and you actually receive a paper QSL card in the mail for confirmed contacts. Some DX stations use stateside managers that will send the DX QSL for the cost of a single self-addressed stamped envelope. You'll usually find the managers listed on the DXer's QRZ page. A lot of DX information, including DX managers, can be found at numerals 425dxn.org. And now, Amateur Radio Insights by Kirk Kleinschmidt, NT0Z, NT0Z at stealthamateur.com. Contesting during solar cycle peaks. The other day, I utterly failed my self-assigned amateur radio challenge. But even in defeat, the results were still glorious. Huh? Let me explain. As you may recall, in recent columns, I have been grousing about the shift to mindlessly robotic FT8-style contacts, in which human participation isn't really needed or necessarily encouraged. The lack of non-FT8 activity on the bands. 20 years of dismal HF propagation. A lost generation of hams who never really experienced what it's like to work the bands during periods of excellent propagation and plentiful stations, etc. In my mind, at least, these things are still germane. But thanks to the convergence of a now cooperating solar cycle and many thousands of radio contesting enthusiasts, even beginners have an opportunity to see what they probably missed out on between 2003 and 2022 or thereabouts. As detailed here, over the past year or so, I recently moved my test tower 11 inches to the west, recabled the coax run from the shack to the death ray, an NA4RR hexagonal beam at 22 feet, and replaced the tower's suspect weatherproof junction box with something that's much sexier and more functional. I also built a proper RF choke for the backyard inverted L and redid the wire antenna element connectors in preparation for a winter season that hasn't yet arrived in Minnesota. Yay! With spiffed-up antennas and an urge to experience a bygone era of fantastic propagation, the night before the ARRL International CWDX contest, I glanced at the space weather conditions. What's this? A solar flux reading pushing 170 with a quiet A index? Hey, it wasn't 1958, the craziest solar flux in recorded history. But it was far better than 2018. A week or two earlier, I'd had excellent results fooling around in the CQ-RTTY contest, making lots of easy DX QSOs, while running my typical 5 watts of RF. I need only 7 or 8 entities to make DXCC QRP-RTTY, so I'm getting antsy. Could this be a killer weekend on HF? Things were looking good. But I didn't have 48 hours to devote to the contest, so I set a goal that I have sought for years, working DXCC QRP in a single contest. big gun stations do this regularly. With reasonably good propagation and a set of killer beams, DXCC in a day with a kilowatt happens all the time, especially if you live on the East Coast or in the Canary Islands. Not to minimize your suffering, but working DX is a lot easier from the East Coast as compared to the RF hole that is the Midwest. I lived in Connecticut for years, so I can say that without hesitation. And Florida makes Connecticut look like a dummy load. Don't get me started. A little strategy. Serious contesters use various strategies to maximize their scores based on location, antennas, and operator skills. Because I wasn't trying to win the contest, not even in an obscure category, which is how little pistol stations win, my approach was different. In a conventional sense, contests are won by maximizing multipliers, DXCC entities in this case, and the total number of stations worked, typically on a single band or on the maximum number of bands. High bands during the day, low bands at night. If 20 meters stays open around the clock, so be it. If 15 meters stays open throughout the nighttime hours, pinch yourself because you're probably in an actual time machine. Because of my self-assigned goal of working 100 DXCC entities in a single contest while running 5 watts output on CW, I wouldn't be trying to work more than one station in any particular entity, regardless of band. Now, I did work some stations on multiple bands because they were rare, or because they were rare and easy. I didn't want to take much precious time to work the same entities on multiple bands, but I'm getting closer, after 40 plus years, to finishing 5-band DXCC QRP. So, opportunity is opportunity. If propagation was commensurate with the space weather conditions just before the start of the contest, I knew that 20 to 10 meters would be jammed with strong DX signals from tip to tail. But the stations I most needed to work, in Europe and Africa, would peak in the hours from 8 a.m. to noon local, especially on 10 meters, which typically rewards QRP ops more than any other HF band. Because I traditionally keep vampire hours, I usually sleep from 5 a.m. to 11 a.m., which would crush my chances. It's true that South America and Asian stations are available in the afternoons and early evening, but the thousand-strong wall of European stations is clearly a morning thing, outside of 1958. The contest starts at 6 p.m. local for me. And I did work a bunch of stations that evening, especially on 20 meters. The hex beam was tuned and rotating, and the inverted L was remotely tuning on all bands 80 to 10, but not 160, which was sacrificed this season because of technical difficulties. What I really wanted, however, was a couple morning runs with good conditions, say 8 a.m. to noon, on 10 and 15 meters. If the radio gods would grant me that, there was hope that I might reach my somewhat challenging goal. I managed to sleep a few hours beforehand, so after I topped off my giant coffee mug, I trundled into the basement shack, flipped the switches, and set the rotator to 45 degrees azimuth to give both barrels of the death ray, yes, a mixed metaphor to be sure, to my European friends. When I saw 10 meters on my rig's bandscope, I was stunned. From 28 to 28.175, the scope was essentially solid, with hundreds to thousands of simultaneous signals. Ah, the good old days. Into the fray. I have been an advanced casual contester for decades, so with conditions such as these, I knew from past experience that results would start coming straight away. Which they did. European stations were 20 over S9 and simply flogging each other because of sheer numbers. Because of the target-rich environment, few stations were encumbered with pileups. I was running 5 watts, while most were running a kilowatt or 400 watts in UK entities. Some were running 100 watts. One corker was running 73 watts, and I only worked one DX station who was also running QRP. DX stations have to note their RF power as part of the contest exchange, so ops have to copy it exactly to get credit for the contact if officially participating. I did miss a few stations that I called, KH0W for one, on an island in the northern Mariana chain. But the low mini beam was working well, and the dual inverted L verticals were too, especially on the low bands at night. And even though ground-mounted verticals really want to be elevated verticals, ground planes, on 20 to 10, I felt all grown up the few times I switched to the vertical to work a station off-axis because I had the big beam pointed elsewhere. Take that, Bob Loker, W9KNI. Good stuff. There was a surprising number of rare or hard-to-find entities present, plus signals emanating from the usual propagation vortices that happen to host contest superstations. These include the Canary Islands, Balearic Islands, the Azores, Madeira, etc. The region off the coast of Spain, Portugal, and Morocco always enjoys DX propagation, regardless of the state of the solar cycle, but you may find it difficult or impossible to find stations there outside of contests. This time, a less common vortex participant showed up, EA9, commonly known as Ceuta and Melilla, tiny Spanish enclaves inside Morocco, which also came out to play, and was easy to work because it's also a denizen of the vortex. In that region, I also worked Malta, which, while not really rare, is definitely uncommon. Cyprus, a definite new one for me, and Israel, which I've only worked a couple of times over the years, but never QRP until now. A station from Kaliningrad handed out contacts from that politically interesting Russian enclave that's physically separate from Mother Russia. In Kazakhstan, the former Soviet client state made famous by the comedy movie Borat. If Borat were a contester, he'd surely say, "Cultural learnings of America for make benefit glorious CW of Kazakhstan." Very nice, indeed. All the Baltic hams were on with abandon, dispensing contacts from the many smaller countries that used to mostly be Yugoslavia or Czechoslovakia. I worked North Macedonia for the first time, although I almost certainly worked it back in the day when it was a region of Yugoslavia. Stations from the UK were positively rampant, and I took advantage of that to cement a few lesser available entities and islands, which include the Isle of Man, Guernsey, and Jersey, Channel Islands. Despite the war, I counted at least 6 stations from Ukraine slinging dits, and I worked one station on Chile's Juan Fernandez Islands, CB0, the Robinson Crusoe Island of the classic story. Other than Morocco, propagation from the zero zone to Africa was nowhere to be found. Conversely, propagation to Japan was quite the opposite. Japanese hams, barely audible for about 20 years, were simply QRMing the entire band. It was gloriously horrible, especially because I only needed 1 and not 300, due to my particular approach to the contest. I listened intently for stations on Ogasawara Island, a separate entity, prefix JD, but that was about the only prefix I didn't hear. We'll continue this article next time. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio. My name is Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.